I have an opportunity through another vendor to send Tony and his wife some Auracare, our mouthwash. And in that, I put a little note and I kind of went over the story and I said, listen, I know you don't know who I am. And I said, but you've been such an impact on my life, along with Fortune Management and Tony and Brenda and Bernie. And I said, you don't realize what an impact you've done. And I've told him a little bit about our charities and my businesses and different things. Put down a lever, never known, you know, if he would ever get it. And I thought, if I get it, maybe I'll hear it through those guys.
You are listening to Fingerprints on Success, the podcast dedicated to highlighting unique imprints left by business leaders, mentors, and successful entrepreneurs. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of serial entrepreneurs, professionals, leaders, and coaches to uncover the secrets behind achieving success both professionally and personally. Guiding you on this podcast is none other than Bill Barrett, an award-winning corporate and business law attorney and CEO of the law firm Mandelbaum Barrett PC, where he and his team have provided a full array of legal services to both businesses and individuals throughout the country. Get ready and let's get to the show.
Hi, everyone. I think you're going to really love today's episode featuring Dr. Bob Martino. Dr. Martino is a serial entrepreneur that I think you're going to really enjoy hearing his stories. He's not only had been a dentist by trade, but he built successful businesses in different verticals completely outside of dentistry, including even aeronautics. I think for our entrepreneurial listeners today, you're going to really enjoy hearing about his mindsets, hearing about not having limiting beliefs, and some of his motivations along the way. I thought it was particularly funny when he talked about the government not being able to do a lot of things right, except he first realized when he was poor, his dad brought home government cheese, and he said that the government could do well. So it's lighthearted, but filled with tons of content today. I hope you really enjoyed today's episode with Dr. Bob Martino. Hi, everyone. I am so excited to have on our show today Dr. Bob Martino. Dr. Martino is a good friend of mine and a client, full disclosure. We also sit on some boards together. I think that Dr. Martino's background is really interesting for our entrepreneurial listeners today. For those who don't know Dr. Martino, he owns and operates 7 dental practices and has over 100 employees in West Virginia. He's also the CEO of Wilmar Management Company. Throughout his career, he's founded a worldwide aeronautics company. He's launched a company, a brand, and manufacture and sell Auracare, which is a dental oral rinse. Also a telemedicine company, and has been involved in many entrepreneurial endeavors. I think it's really fascinating to see the success he's reached in completely different verticals, in some cases totally unrelated, in some cases related. So, Bob, welcome to the program.
Bill, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, we're glad to have you on. So what I'd like to do is just start. I think for our listeners, they'd love to hear a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey. Where did it start? And kind of walk us through where you are today and kind of how these different opportunities emerge throughout your business career.
My story starts with pain, right? You know, I had a lot of pain in my life. And I remember the day. It was December 31st, 2001. I had 3 dental practices at the time. I had a wife that was pregnant with twins, and a teenage daughter and a 9-month-old daughter. And we always take off between Christmas and New Year's. Still do to this day. And it was December 31st, and I had a party to go to. I was still at work. It was 6 o'clock at night. Everyone else in my organization was off that whole week. I had worked every day, including Christmas Day, including New Year's Eve. And I was thinking, and the payroll was due the next day. How am I going to get all this done and still go to the party? Still not piss off my pregnant wife. And I said, something's got to change. And that's when I realized that I'm much more than a dentist. And some of that is like a good thing. Some of it, I was payroll guy. I was website designer. I was motivator. I was HR director. I was business developer. I was chief mail opener. Everything on the list, I was, babysitter, everything. And I said, wow, I went to dental school. What am I doing all this stuff? And I said, I'm so much more than a dentist. I'm all these other things. And then it kind of hit me and I said, I am so much more than a dentist. Hey, so what I really want to do, I said, I want to pick the five things that I really want to do. And the first one was, I want to be CEO. I like that part. I wanted to be a leader, which I don't think I was being a great leader. I was a doer. And because I was seeing patients at the time and trying to run a business, I wanted to be a husband and a father, which I think I wasn't doing a very good job of because of all the doing. I wanted to be a coach. I love sports. So I wanted to be a coach, specifically a basketball coach. And then what surprised me on that list, I surprised myself. I put entrepreneur. And I've never thought of that before. And I thought, I want to grow this thing. And I cannot handle anymore. I can't do it. I haven't even enjoyed our time off. And so the one thing that wasn't on that list was be a dentist. And that's what I went to school for. And that's what I, it was a pain in the butt going through dental school. And so, but that didn't make my list. And so right then I decided I got to do something about that. If I want to do all these things that I want to do, I can't sit there and do patients. I can affect my businesses in other ways. And so I said right then, and we had three. We eventually expanded to nine. I sold a couple. My strategy was first to build them up, buy them low, build them up, and then sell them until I figured out, why do I sell when I make an income from these? I'll just keep them, Right. And so that's why we're at seven. We might be in expansion mode a little bit more this year, but that's kind of my story. That's why I became all these things. And, fast forward, 20 some years later, and I am all the things that I set out to be for my organization, for my family, for my, I'm a high school basketball coach. So it is up to that day, there was no plan. There was I just acquired this office, and there was no path. But up to that day, I was just doing what was trying to survive.
Yeah. So it sounds like you made a distinction too, because most people would say, hey, Dr. Martino, when you had three practices, you were an entrepreneur. You owned three businesses, right?
I didn't think I was.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing kind of is, kind of almost like a distinction between kind of owning a job versus owning and running a business. Because if you're the chief cook, bottle washer, and in this case, the caregiver and everything else, in your mind, I owned three businesses, but you really didn't feel like an entrepreneur at that moment.
I didn't own them. They owned me.
Yeah.
And they really did. They owned me. And I had to get control back. And that's why I say pain. I was in a lot of pain right then. And pain's what drove me to be a better CEO, be a better leader. I look at this stuff a little bit different than, I'm a dentist that happens to own business. So I changed that from I'm a business guy to that happens to be a dentist.
Yeah. So tell the listeners too now. And so you start building this successful business, right? You're an entrepreneur who happens to be a dentist and you're building the enterprise, but then you end up in other businesses at the same time that you still own and operate today. Tell me, in the journey, how does that come about? How do you go from building this enterprise to something totally different?
Yeah. So today I'm in a hangar, right? That's where my offices are. And yesterday I was at NetJets, which is the world's largest airline. And so it was it has nothing to do differently than a mindset. And so back in 2001, when I was doing that, if this opportunity would have came up, there's no way I could have done it. There's no way I would have thought about it. So it's a mindset, because a lot of people ask me that, what does airplanes and dentistry have to do with each other? And there's a lot, believe it or not. But the first thing is the thought process of, yes, I can do this, and I see an opportunity there. And basically started, had a person that was my tennis partner, and he was really good doubles partner, and he had to leave. And he said, unless we start this business together. And he goes, I know everything about airplanes. And I knew nothing about it. And he said, but I knew nothing about business. I said, I know a little bit about business. And this is the time I've already made this decision. I'm you know, running probably five or six practices at the time, and in that entrepreneur mode. And so, yeah, let's try it. And what I found out is that the businesses, and really all businesses, are very similar. You still got to take care of the end user. You got to give them a great experience. You got to communicate. So I'm at a meeting yesterday at NetJets, and the first thing out of their mouth is, you're so unique than any other of our maintenance people. You're the best communicators in all any vendor that we have to, and they work with thousands of vendors. You're the best communicator. And you know, in my head, I'm thinking, that's no accident. You know, I learned that through dentistry. I learned that through, you know, management people that, you know, my, what I would call consultants with Fortune Management that coached me. And that communication is the key. You know, that is, you know, and it's not just us talking, but us listening and finding out. In my first meeting at NetJets 15 years ago, the guy said, there's 476 maintenance companies ahead of you. He said, so I just want you to know what you're getting into. And I said, what are those not doing? So I asked the question, and I found out, like, what's your pain point? And that's a communication process. You know, it's finding out what they needed. And they said, you know, we need a company that can do airframe and avionics and engines, and can run taxi, because a lot of times we have to call two or three people to go out on the road to fix a plane. Well, we'd like to call one. And I said, so if we became that, you would call us? And he said, yes. So that was our goal. Find out what they wanted and then provide them for us. And I'm happy to say, you know, I'd love to take all the credit, but, you know, I have great partners in this business. And we are the number one maintenance company they call when they have a problem. You know, if they have an engine problem, we're the first one they call. And so we did meet that goal, but it all came from what I've learned early on in dentistry. So,
yeah, it's interesting too, because at the end of the day, human relationships are human relationships, right? Like whether it's a marriage with people or That's a right. partnership or a customer, it's all communication. Yeah. And it is kind of fascinating. You know, similarly, you know, I always ask people when we're trying to help someone, what's your ideal outcome? If you could have a blank piece of paper and write the script of how this would perfectly go, what does it look like?
Right.
And then once you hear it, you can try to deliver it. Right.
Right. Yeah. So many people don't want to ask that question. Right. Like, you know, I don't know whether they're afraid they underdeliver or whatever, well, but you got to find out what they want, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, lawyers, you know, of which I'm one, they are infamous for starting to tell people what they need before they've asked them what they want.
Believe me, dentists are the same way, you know? So
I always found that fascinating when I was starting to get clients of my own, and I'd hear other lawyers start to just tell people what they needed to do. And I thought to myself, they haven't even asked him yet what the ideal outcome looks like. What if the advice isn't even what they want? They haven't even asked yet. So it's kind of interesting.
It's not that hard. You know, it's not that hard. You know,
it seems like common sense. You know, I guess maybe it's because like when I was a kid, I worked at like a deli making sandwiches and you had to like make sure you gave them what they wanted. So
That's right.
So in addition to the aeronautics company, though, you also run and created and founded, you know, another business in AuraCare. I mean, tell us, how did that come about?
Well, there's a product out in dentistry called chlorhexidine, and all of us dentists hate it. It stains the teeth. You can only use it for 2 weeks. It changes your taste. It tastes terrible, causes calculus, and every dentist in America uses it. And so me and a couple other dentists just got together, and actually Rick Downs was like what we always call the science guy of us. I said, you know, as we were talking to him, we go, you know, we should do something about this problem. Everyone hates it. And the only reason they use it, the only reason, is because that's what we used in school. And so we worked on a formula. We got some investors and worked on a formula and came up with a formula that did the opposite of what chlorhexidine, which was great because we already had a roadmap. We had a roadmap. We knew what we wanted it to do. We wanted to kill bacteria, viruses, and fungus, but we also knew what we didn't want it to do. So we spent like over $1 million developing the right rinse for what we wanted and what we didn't want. And then they're like, great, we have this product. And so we put an investor group, we hired a CEO, and the CEO was very important in the development of it. And he was a developer of other products. And so he was really good at that. But then we got to the point where we got a great product. Now we got to go sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the challenges came in. And found out that the guy was great at developing the product. He wasn't very good at selling the product. And so after 2 years of losing money every month, and you know, we're losing $40,000 this month, and you know, you're just trying to keep your head above water. And of course, I was always just given advice. I was never like really in. The board finally came together and said, we got to do something different and we've got to let him go. And which was a tough because we all liked him. Nicest guy.
Yeah.
But that's what we did. And so then we were trying to figure out, and this was probably about 11 years ago. And they asked me, they said, would you be the interim CEO and to get this thing running until we can find a CEO? And 11 years later, I still am the interim CEO.
That's quite an interim.
Yeah.
Quite an interim period.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever been named that. And so here's the thing. How did that, and it is very successful, profitable. We're starting to go into Europe. And
that's great.
We have millions of people that use it. And so when people ask me like, well, what did you do right? What do you mean? I say, I do two things well. A lot of things I do bad, but I do two things really well. I build good teams, and I guess three, because I build good teams and then I let them do what they need to do. I'm still involved, but I give them responsibility. So I'm really good at that for some reason, picking out talent. And then the second thing is, I'm really good at making decisions. Now, I didn't say good decisions. I'm just good at making them. Sometimes they're horrible decisions. But I'm not a wishy-washy. We're not thinking on it for weeks. Let's make the decision, and we're going to learn about something. So those are two things. All day, that's what I'm doing, is making decisions. I mean, today was just one of those days. I mean, it must have been 200-300 decisions I made. And some of them are as simple as what we're having for lunch. And some of them are major things that are going on. And it's like this, let's go, let's do it. Because if I sit there and analyze, I don't think I get any better. And I think I can only get so I try to get all the information, but the more information that we get by actually doing something, I think that's the problem with entrepreneurs and any business owners. I think we think a lot. I think we talk a lot. I think we plan a lot, but we don't always do a lot. In other words, there's the planning stage. There's the thought process. There's the creative stage. But at some point, we have to get to the actual doing stage so we learn where to go. And I think, like I said, I think that's what we do well.
Yeah. Well, let me shift gears on you a little bit. You know, one of the things that's always struck me in my business as an attorney for closely held businesses and entrepreneurs, when people have reached a very high level of success, and they reflect on it, probably while they're going through it, they don't even think about it. But when they reflect on it, sometimes there's one or two overarching guiding principles that they think about and say, you know, this is a common guiding principle that I have had, whether I knew it at the time or not. And it's kind of woven through all my various success stories. Do you have any of those that you could share with our entrepreneurs that you think?
Yeah, I have one that's, it's kind of weird. It's not like who we are. It's just a motivation. It's a motivation that it keeps me going. And it's, I call it the $70,000 motivation. And so when I was in dental school, and I went to dental school at WVU, Western University, and I work in West Virginia, and I lived here all my life. And I was sitting beside a guy right next to me, and he says to me, I know what you're going to do when you get out of dental school. And I said, oh, really? What's that? Because I really hadn't had that planned in my mind yet. And he said, you're going back to your hometown. And he says, you're going to make $70,000. You'll be happy. And that's where you're going to be. He said, you know, you're not going to, basically saying you're going to do West Virginia dentistry. That's, you know, that's where. And so, well, by golly, that motivated me. Because I was going back to my hometown. And I
did. he kind of called you out, is what you're saying.
Called me out, and I was. But, you know, the first year that I did 70,000, I thought of him. I go, okay. And then the first quarter we did 70,000, I thought, okay. Now, what's the next? Then the first month that we did 70,000, I'm thinking, okay, John, I'm hitting it. John's his name. And I, okay, you motivate me. And then I remember the first day that we did 70,000.
Wow. Yeah.
And then you want to do that consistently. And then, you know, we've actually, with all my businesses, we've had a day where 1 hour, every hour on the day, we average 70,000. Now, we're not even close to ever doing that on a consistent basis, but it's a motivating factor for me. Like, it's like the 70,000 motivate. And it's like, okay, don't doubt me, because that gives me a motivation. And it was always that I can remember it to yet, like it was yesterday, him telling me that, and almost kind of like, I'm going to pigeonhole you and you'll never do anything really great. And the problem is, I believe that a little bit too. You know, I'm like, oh, geez, what if he's right and everything? So I think I use that, because I have a lot of people ask me, like, when are you going to retire? And I'm like, never. Like, I enjoy what I do. I love this. It's a motivating factor, you know. But, you know, I think you need that. I think some people need that motivation in their lives. And that, it's a shame that that comment fueled me for so long. But it is, it sometimes you got to pick what motivates you. And that was one thing that really motivated me.
Enjoying the show so far? We've received fantastic feedback since we started, and we love your questions. Entrepreneurs face unique challenges, and as a corporate attorney and CEO, Bill understands that. Whether it's your first location, industry regulations, succession plans, or exit strategies for your business, the journey is rarely a smooth one. Mandelbaum Barrett PC offers listeners of this podcast a 20-minute consultation with their award-winning team. From mergers and acquisitions to litigation, they help entrepreneurs navigate new opportunities, get invaluable insights, and support to not just survive, but thrive. Click the link in the episode description or visit mblawfirm.com for details. Once again, it's mblawfirm.com. Now, back to our show.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a mindset, like, you know, to defy the naysayers or the negatives. I remember when I first thought I wanted to be a lawyer, I had a friend of mine, and I had said, you know, I think I want to be a lawyer at a big worldwide New York City Wall Street law firm. And he said, you'll never get that job. And I said, what do you mean I'll never get that job? Like, that's what I want to do. And he's like, well, to do that, you're going to have to go to like a top 10 law school, Ivy League or something similar. And then you're going to have to be lucky enough to get in interviews. And then. I had that chip on my shoulder from the first day of school. And, you know, and I got into UVA, which is the sixth ranked law school or whatever in the country, and got, you know, got the interviews, yeah, and got that job. And I used that as motivation, you know, all the way through. And I made it a point, you know, couldn't resist. Maybe at some point along the way, when I saw him, you know, he mentioned, oh, it's really great. And I'll say, yeah, you remember when you told me that I'd never be able to do that?
Yeah.
You know? So the irony is I ended up hating that job. and thank God I ended up at my current firm, and I've been here now for 24 years, and it was the worst job ever, but I got it. So,
and I think there's a lot of people on along the way that were encouraging, but it's the one that doubted you that stands out, that you go, I want. And even though, like, I've never had a conversation with him about this, you know, he was his idea. He was going to this big city, and then he's actually still in West Virginia, you know, single
in his hometown.
Yeah. So it was funny, but the idea is I needed someone maybe to doubt me as much as I needed people to encourage me to go forward.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a lot like sports too, you know, like great coaches find ways to motivate people.
That's right.
Bill Parcells used to talk about that, you know, some players needed a kick in the rear end.
Right.
Some needed to hear, you know, I'm really disappointed. I thought that you would have this ability, but maybe I was wrong. And he said he motivated everybody differently, right?
So, right.
All right. So let me ask you this question. What would, for lack of a better description, what would, you know, Dr. Bob Martino today tell Dr. Bob Martino maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago in terms of pitfalls, blind spots, the things you wish you didn't do, or the things you learned that, you know, you didn't see coming that you would tell an entrepreneur today, you know, here's what you don't want to do? Because nobody gets to where they are without having some pitfalls and issues along the way.
I think the biggest thing is get out of your own way. I mean, you know, I think that, I don't know, for years, we'd have a great year and I'd worry about the next year. Like, we can't have that good, you know, and it was always the worry about, can I keep this going? And I think trust in yourself. I think that's the, you know, I have a story, and there's a, It's up in my office. A long time ago, I had an idea, entrepreneurial idea, about having a gas truck to go around, and because I'd work with all the people that I would work with, they would always be on E, you know. I didn't go to the gas, you know, and I asked them. I said, if a gas truck can come here, even if it was a little bit more expensive, would you fill up? Oh, yes, I'd have them filling up. Maybe they would change your oil. You know, I would do that and everything. So I had this idea, okay? So I remember it was Christmas time. I don't know what, maybe I'm having trouble with Christmas, you know, because, you know, the holidays. But all my family was over, especially my wife's family and everything. And you know, I was relatively successful at the time, but nothing where I'm, you know, at nowadays. And so I was a little nervous to tell them about this idea. And I said, I got this idea about this gas truck. Instead of having a gas station, why don't we bring the gas to them? And we could go around and it'd be like an Uber, like, you know, you would just order it and you could see the truck and, you know, and this was before Uber, so I didn't call it Uber, but, and they laughed at me so hard. And they just, you know, they were laughing like, that's so stupid. And they were, and I mean, to this day, you know what I mean? Until I'm in a hotel somewhere, going to a convention, and I get the USA Today. Open up to the business page, and the front page of it is talking about the new wave of having gas trucks, and it's in California and everything like this. And I went, son of a bitch. I did not believe in myself enough to fight for that. And I let people laugh at me, and that motivated that. Like, it didn't motivate me. It just shut me down. Like, wow, that must be a really stupid idea. And everything, even I knew it wasn't. Even though I knew in my heart that I would use it, you know what I mean? I know all my staff would use it, you know what I mean? And so I think, so, and that's what I have on the sign. I have that article. And as I walk out the door, it says, believe in yourself and not what other people think. And I think that's the biggest advice that I can, offer an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So what you're really saying is the pitfall to avoid is having limiting beliefs, right? Don't have limiting beliefs.
And you may not have, but you know, you have that trusted inner circle and you're eventually, when you have an idea, you have to tell someone for it to become, you know, and you hope it's the people that will support you and not laugh at you, but tell you the truth too. You want to know, hey, that's a really, or play devil's advocate or whatever.
Sure.
But so it's not only your limited beliefs, but it's also the limited beliefs of your inner circle of the people that you trust, you know, and you want people, you don't want yes people, but you want people to tell the truth for you, but also support you in that I'm not going to make fun of you and I'm not going to laugh at you and I'm not going to make you feel so bad because that discourages creativity, you know, and we got to watch that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting too. I always found too, like in my profession, I think lawyers in general are worriers, or there's a little bit of negativity that kind of comes with the package. And I've always been super upbeat and positive think about a growth mindset. And it's amazing like how, you know, when you finish a fiscal year in professionals, not just lawyers, professional services, you know, you get to December 31 and January 1st, you got to start all over again, right? Start with zero.
Starts right again. That's right.
Start with zero in every column and have to, there's no necessarily repeat business or whatever. You got to recreate it all over again. And I've always looked at it as, you know, an opportunity to grow. Or if people are worried about the economy, you know, with crisis comes opportunity, you know.
Right, right.
But there's a lot of people out there who will be like, oh, the economy is not going to be good. Oh, last year was such a good year. How do you repeat last year? And they'll bring you right down. They'll bring you right down.
I think the thing about December 31st is, you know, and maybe January 1st, you get to look back and say, oh, what a great year I had. But then January 2nd, you're going to the next year. And I think it early on, that's what bothered me the most is that, you know, instead of looking at it as, like you said, as an opportunity or something, I was looking at it, oh, I got to do this all over again. You know what I mean? And I don't even, you know, it's so easy to go, you know, like celebrate. We don't celebrate the wins as much as we should. You had a great year and you get to celebrate it for maybe a day and then you're back into the grind. But if you had a bad year, you know, you'd be all January, we'd be trying to figure out what did we do wrong. And, And I think we don't celebrate the wins as much. You know, it's like that. You worry more about the losses than celebrating the wins.
I think that is such a great point, because, and I think it's a common thread too, when people have achieved a lot of success and they're scoring wins a lot, it's in a way they almost kind of get, in an unfortunate way, right? You can kind of get numb to the wins, and to your point, not celebrate. And I remember my father used to say to me, he said, you know, when you have a big deal or some, you know, something goes great, or you have some kind of achievement or success, he used to say, you know, take a breath, enjoy, think about it, reflect on it, enjoy it. Maybe, you know, don't be irresponsible. Maybe treat yourself to something, and maybe more importantly, whoever your significant other or loved one or whatever is, treat them to something.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not only along for the journey with you, but they're making sacrifices so that you, right, you know, are able to do what you do. And I think that that's kind of an interesting thing. So
that is some great advice right there. That is great advice, because I think we all could use that more. Now, listen, you know, we need wins, right? You know what I mean? And,
sure.
And we've all had challenges and everything. And I always say success I've had lets me fail. So there's some things that I would not try if I wasn't successful. So, you know, not only should we celebrate it, but it also gives us freedom that I don't think we all realize, that, you know, we can take a chance. We can, you know, maybe this can go in a hole and let you fail. And I know for me, I always like, okay, well, let's try this. It's not going to be the end of the world if it goes bad, but there's a lot of possibility.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big mantra of mine.
Right. And maybe 25 years ago, it wouldn't have been as easy to take that risk, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I didn't know at the time that we were poor, because my parents did such a great job of it. You know, we had one bathroom in the house, four kids. I slept with my brothers till they went to college, you know, and we had two full beds. One got to sleep by himself. I got to sleep with the other one. And I still didn't realize that. I didn't realize that until my dad brought home government cheese. And I started thinking, why are we getting government cheese? Now, the one thing is, I'm a small government guy. I don't want my government in my business and everything, because I think they don't do things well, like healthcare and different things like that.
Sure.
But the government can make some damn good cheese. I'm just telling you. They do a good job of cheese. They should stay in that business, because it was some good cheese, I tell you that. But I didn't realize that we were poor until that moment. But
yeah. Well, that's you know what, as you said, that's a tribute to your parents too, because obviously, you know, the deliverable was happiness, right?
Right.
It didn't have to be fancy, you know, to have it. Well, you know, that's maybe a perfect segue to the next question I have for you, which is, you know, the show is called Fingerprints on Success, and embedded in there, of course, is, you know, talking about the impact that others have on the success of entrepreneurs. And we love to talk a little bit about mentors or people that, when you reflect on your career and your businesses, you say, you know, if it wasn't for this person or these persons, I might really not be where I am right now. So can you tell us, did you have any people like that in your life on this journey?
Yeah, many, some stand out. I think my parents are the ones that stand out, and they were the least entrepreneur people that you would ever know, you know. But it wasn't about that. It was about how to treat people, how nice they were. When my dad passed away at his funeral, long line of people. This guy wasn't a business guy. He worked at the VA hospital, but almost every one of them said to me, he was the nicest guy we knew. And I thought, that's success. When you're at your funeral and these people are saying, that's the nicest guy, that is success. So I think that I've taken that, and with all my partners. I want my partners to feel I'm given more, you know, than I have to. And so I get that from my parents. And, but business wise, you know, I have really two main ones, and one's a person and one's part, and he's part of the thing that the founder of it, you know, so the company that I think I wouldn't be here without is a Fortune Management, and they're a management group that does healthcare. And I was there. I took my boards, and the day after I took my boards, we flew down to Atlanta, and it was 1990, and that's when it was forming, and it was founded by Tony Robbins and this group, you know, Paul Bass, Bernie Stoltz, all these people. And so as a company, there's Brenda Kessler, Paul Bass, Bernie Stoltz. Like, they've molded me to who I am. But it was all surrounded by Tony Robbins, motivational, and just systems that they created. And they created at these seminars back in 1990 that I was at. And it was one of those things where I remember it like it was yesterday. I was walking through. I had on a blue blazer, a blue and red tie, striped tie. And I happened to, Tony Robbins happened to have the exact same outfit on. And I didn't know at the time and everything, but I'm walking by, and this guy, if you know Tony Robbins, is this big 6'7", real big guy. He just grabs me and he says, "What are you doing dressing like me?" I'm scared of that. But I learned some things. I said, "I'm just modeling you. I'm trying to be successful." And he said, got in my face, doing, "Good answer." You know, and I'm like, "Oh my God." But his teachings and me watching all that stuff created like possibility for me, and like what was possible, and how never to take no for an answer, and there's always another possibility. So fast forward this 30 some years later, I have an opportunity through another vendor to send Tony and his wife some Oracare or mouthwash. And in that, I put a little note, and I kind of went over the story, and I said, "Listen, I know you don't know who I am." And I said, "But you've been such an impact on my life, along with Fortune Management and Tony and Brenda and Bernie." And I said, "You don't realize what an impact you've done." And I've told him a little bit about our charities and my businesses and different things. Put down a lever, never known, you know, if he would ever get it. And I thought, if I get it, maybe I'll hear it through those guys. One day I get a voicemail and I listen to it, and it's Tony Robbins. He's Dr. Bob, you know, and he's like, "I got your stuff. I got your letter." He goes, "I just want to tell you," you know. And that's the most, that's my most cherished voicemail. Like, I have it saved, and I'm like, this was my mentor. And he's like, "It sounds like you really took good notes." So he was like my mentor, and to have a voicemail from him was really great. And then, like I said, Fortune Management, which I'm still part of today. I have just a super great coach, Ty Azinger. Ty is just, I think that's the other thing. I think all of us should have a coach. You know, you think, "Well, don't you know it all?" Well, no, don't. And so I have a great coach with him, and we hit it off. And every month I look forward to talk, and we talk for an hour, and it seems like we could do 4 hours. And he makes me believe in myself more than maybe I do. And he's the one that he told me, he said, "Bob, you have 1,000 ideas every year, I'm sure." He said, 997 of them are just terrible. He said, "But 3 of them could change the world." Yeah. And he said, "Those are the ones that you want to act upon." So it's like, I see a history, and I see, and I hate to single out people because there's so many people. And my partner, who's still my partner, he's retired, but he's still my partner, that I still send checks to every month, even though he doesn't do anything in the business. Because I wouldn't be here without him and investing in fortune management and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of people along that way to get there. And I'm very thankful for all of them.
Well, it sounds like too, like you, you know, you opened up your mind and your soul, so to speak, to, you have to be receptive to being mentored, right? You know, you have to have that mentality that, you know, I'm not always the smartest guy in the room. There's a lot of other people. And I happen to, as you know Ty Aldinger as well. You know, he would actually be a great guest on this show as a former captain of a United States Navy aircraft carrier. Pretty cool guy. So talk a little bit about this. You know, you've had a lot of people, as you said, throughout your life that have been great mentors, coaches, advisors. What kind of things do you do? And I know you do a lot. What kind of things do you do to kind of pay it forward now that you're in the position you are, you know, to help other people on their journey?
Well, you know, what I do is, you know, Fortune has a lot of coaches out there, and sometimes they'll say, will you talk to this guy and will you talk to them? And so I do that. And just lately, I've been speaking. You know, I've been going out and I've got a talk in Las Vegas here. And it's all about kind of what we're talking about today on, because a lot of people, I put down the handpiece, the drill, age 38. And a lot of people want to do that. They want to. And so I go out and talk to them. And then, you know, then I say, hey, listen, if you need someone to talk to, and I do it all the time. And I think, and I don't charge for it. I'm just, what I'm trying to do is motivate them to be, you know, what they could do, or maybe what they don't want to do, because there's different challenges to, you know, what we do here. And, but I also with my teams, I mean, we try to train leadership, you know, and I think, I have great leaders. And I have a house in Florida, and when I go to Florida, I still work, but they are the ones that are like, they're doing it. And all I know is, I think it was July or maybe it was June, I spent the whole month in Florida and we had our highest month ever. So maybe I'm just getting in the way, you know what I mean? So so I think training leaders to be able to replace you and trusting them, I think that's very big. Not that having, you know, between all the businesses, we probably have 140 some employees. It's challenging. It's in today's market, it's even more challenging. And I heard something that John Maxwell, who's another guy I love listening to, is said something. He said, "You know what my greatest asset is?" He said, "It's my people and my business." He said, "You know what my biggest challenge is? It's the people."
Yeah, my people.
It's the people in my business. And I think, God, you couldn't have said more than that. You know, I couldn't do what I do without them, you know, but it is challenging. And I think the more that you know, people want to take responsibility from people. I don't agree with that. I think the more responsibility you give them, the better people you'll have. Yeah. You know, so
I think there's a lot of wisdom there. So for our business owners and entrepreneurs out there that are listening, what's a current event, topic, or something that's on your mind that you think you're either navigating right now or you think is going to have to be navigated that, you know, that you see as kind of an emerging issue or challenge out there that that our entrepreneurs that are listening should be ready for?
It's the COVID thing. And when I say it's the COVID thing, it's, I think life changed with COVID and life changed with COVID and not what COVID did to our health, but what COVID did to our business and our business and our people's mind. And so before COVID, I think we never had a challenge hiring people or having at least resumes out there to hire. I think after COVID, we do have a challenge. I think everyone's having a challenge, like no matter what business you're in, I think you're having a challenge you're having a people problem and that you're not having enough people, or maybe like for us, we don't lose people to other dental practices, but we lose them to, we have a big FBI center. We lose them to the FBI or West Virginia University and, you know, who can just pay more, have better benefits, all that kind of stuff. And so there, it's a challenge. And so you have to adapt. You can't just go, well, this is a challenge, so, you know, I just going to go home and cry about it. No, you have to do something. So what we did back in April of last year, we were always worked 5 days a week since, it's been 50 years since we've had this business. I always didn't own it. But we always worked 5 days a week. So I said to my staff, I got a plan. And they thought, this is crazy. This is stupid, you know. But I could see people got this experience from COVID of being home. Mm. They liked it, you know. And so I said, how do I get more work-life balance? So what we did is we now work in all my businesses, except my airplane business, which is a whole different world, you know. We work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We're off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And then the next work week, we work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So twice a month, they have a four-day weekend. And I put this caveat into all, when I present this to my staff, and I said, I have the right to change this if this tanks our business.
Right.
So I just want to, I didn't want to tap, but I, you know, I think this will help people. I think they'll get happier. It's been the best decision I ever made. I have happier people. Production has went from this to this. I expected, I think, if we just keep even, if we could just keep even, it's not, it's increased. So we've done more dentistry than we have ever previously and worked less time and happier people. I attract more people who wouldn't want to have 2 4-day weekends every month. So I did that for my current employees. It's not like a business. I just hope I survived it, right? You know, this, but I knew, I just felt it. Like we've got to do something because, you know, you really can't do remote home dentistry. You know what I mean? You have to actually be there, right? So this has really worked for us, and it's done it in Oracare, and we do it in our management office. Everyone does it. And they absolutely love it, and I just got happier people and more productive, believe it or not. So I think you have to adapt to the times. I think that's right now more important to the people that I want to be on my team than the financial or benefits or anything. And I think it came from COVID, and that's what we gave them. Yeah. All of a sudden you can stay home and they go, I really like this staying home thing, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, that's powerful and unique. And I'm sure that our listeners, you know, who are entrepreneurs and closely held business owners, that's going to give some food for thought. As you said, some things, you know, have to be done from a location, so to speak, but what a great thing. I mean, I know a lot of people always say, right, you know, that culture will eat strategy for breakfast, I think is the line. And, you know, that's unique to your culture. So very interesting. So, you know, one of the things I always like to ask everyone, and we're getting down towards the last couple of questions in our interview here, but I always love to talk to people when they've reached a certain level of success. And as you said, you're never going to retire and you still have all these motivations. But, you know, you get to a point where it's obviously not about dollars, you know, there's way more to it than that. What is the why behind, you know, what you do every day? What makes you stay motivated and kind of, when you think back, you know, what's the thing driving you? You know, some people, you know, say it's, you know, maybe it's like they, you know, I know I tell people all the time, like, I love being a hero to other people. That gets me excited. What's the why behind what you do?
I'm a builder. I like to build, whether it's a house, a building, company, people. I love the process. I love taking. So I'm working on something, and we have something that was just presented to this, probably the number one company in all of dentistry. And it's an original idea that we've had. We do it in our offices. And I just heard they're very interested. Like they're putting it in a test market and they're going for it. I'm not thinking how much money can I make from this. I'm thinking these people are all of a sudden excited about a little old idea that we had in here in little old West Virginia. That's what motivates me. That's what gets me going. Like, wow, like this is a multi-billion dollar company and an idea that we had there. So that like really jazzes me, you know, like that gets me up in the morning. That's, you know, I have four or five projects I'm working on, some of them local, some of them national, some of them international. They're all different. They're not all in the same field. Some of them will succeed. Some of them will be stupid and then we'll might lose some money on. But I'm okay with that because I know that helps me be a better CEO for every company that I have because I'm happy. You want your CEO happy and motivating and everything like that. So that makes me happy that I am. Now, I love the building. I even like the implementation of it and going for it. But once it's running, I like other people to do that. Like once it's up and going, I'd be happy to hand it off to somebody else and say, you keep it going. But I like those two parts. And I think that's what gets. And then what I'm worried about is that if I retire, what am I going to build? And I'm a high school basketball coach. I love the competition. I love practice because we're building those kids to be better basketball players. So I think if you looked at my whole life, that's what motivates me. I'm a builder. I've recognized that I'm a builder and I've recognized that makes me happy. And it's not always the money at the end of the day. It's, I think the money's the scorecard.
Sure.
You know, am I doing well? Am I doing, but
it's a measuring stick. It's just part of measuring.
Yeah. But it's not the thing that is the motivating factor, you know, and I have some people that are on my team that, you know, that hopefully this deal goes through, but I've actually given them ownership of part of this company, which that excites me. You know what I mean? Cause not only do they, you know, they work here, but now they have something that they're excited about cause it's their company. So it's really exciting that like that stuff excites me very much as the building part of it. So.
Well, look, everybody loves to win. And when you win together too, that's a lot of fun, right?
Yeah. And I think, given for them to understand the ownership and what you have to go through, and that only makes them better in my management company and understanding, you know, what all has to happen. So it's good all the way around.
Well, you know, I think that with that answer, I think it's a perfect place to call it a wrap, call it a day. And Dr. Bob Martino, I want to thank you. I really appreciate you. Thanks for coming on the show. I'm sure our listeners and entrepreneurs are going to be really excited when they hear this episode. And I just can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today.
Hey, I loved it. Always love talking to you, Bill. It's great.
Thanks, Bob. Take care now. Thanks.
All right.
Hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Fingerprints on Success podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Mandelbaum Barrett PC specializes in partnering with successful business owners and proven entrepreneurs on all of their legal matters. Visit www.mblawfirm.com for more information. Once again, it's www.mblawfirm.com. We'll see you on the next episode.